Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this month's After School Meals Matter call. My name is Clarissa Hayes, and I am a Child Nutrition Policy Analyst here at FRAC. Thanks so much for joining. For anyone joining us for the first time, these calls are held the third Thursday of every month and feature a different topic around expansion of the After School Meal Program. You can find all of our past recordings on frac.org. So today's call is on partnerships and activities for weekends and holidays. As we all know, the After School Meal Program can operate any day of the week during the school year, which includes weekends and school holidays. And today we're going to hear from four speakers on how to make this work. By serving meals every day of the week, sponsors and sites can better meet children's nutritional needs. Partnerships with youth-serving organizations like YMCA, Parks and Rec, faith-based organizations, and food banks are critical for making this work successfully, as they oftentimes have weekend programming and activities happening. So serving meals on weekends and holidays and school breaks can bring in some new logistical considerations, but with careful planning, they can be integrated into operations, and they can also help you run a more financially viable after-school program. So one way to approach this is by starting small and serving one Saturday during the school year a month to kind of work out those kinks with delivery, and then also to experiment with menu and delivery options. For example, if your program does not have the capacity to receive or prepare meals outside of the normal work week due to staffing limitations, you can explore getting meals or preparing earlier on Friday and then storing them until you serve them over the weekend. The other thing to keep in mind when thinking about how you can approach weekend meals is to think about what will happen with unexpected school closures. Consider working with partners on a strategic plan early in the year for providing meals during snow days and other closures. If staffing is an issue, you can think about what would be a central location to direct children to when those closures happen. So we have four great speakers today that are going to represent the sponsor, site, and advocate perspective. So I'm going to stop talking and go ahead and turn it over to them. And then, like I mentioned, after our speakers present, we'll open up the line for questions. And this is just a reminder, if you haven't self-muted, to go ahead and do that now. All right, so our first speaker kicking things off today is Stephanie Berry. Stephanie is the recreation leader at Seattle Parks and Recreation. Stephanie works in the teen and young adult unit and has recently taken the lead on the child and adult care food program. Stephanie, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. Hope everything's going good today. So just to kind of give you guys an overview of what we have going on right now, currently we serve snack or meal every Friday and Saturday evening during our late night program. The late night program is for teens ages 13 and 19. It was created back in, I'd say, the late 80s as an alternative for teens being out on the street during problem hours of the night. This CACFP program itself, I want to say, launched back in 2014 as an additional job readiness type program that we would offer to the kids. It started off as a culinary program, and the goal and vision at the time was to create a centralized program to create the meal and snack to serve at the 12 various late night sites throughout the city of Seattle on Friday and Saturday nights. And it would give the teens the chance to, one, brush up on their culinary skills as well as learn the business ins and outs of a catering program. That includes anywhere from forecasting numbers, meal prep, meal planning, ordering, shopping, all of the above. Unfortunately, a couple of the barriers that we face so far is the amount of staff turnover. Because the late night program is on a Friday and Saturday night, we are... The main amount of staff that we have currently are temp intermittent staff. And so for whatever reason, we're constantly having staff coming in and out and having to, you know, transfer and change and train and do all that good stuff. So recently I've taken over the CACFP program, and what we're in the process of doing right now is trying to build a foundation to get it to where it can reach that vision, to where the teens can come in and participate and learn the catering aspect, the business aspect, the forecasting, you name it. As it sits right now, we have three staff that come to a centralized location, create the meals, package it, and then they deliver it throughout the city at the 12 different sites. They come in, Thursdays to start meal prep, whether it's, you know, separating the plates, forks, knives, and spoons, stuff that needs to be delivered, as well as, you know, prepping, cutting, whatnot. Then we have the staff return Friday afternoons to start the actual cooking itself. They package everything. We get the numbers pulled from the site from what the people enter in from their participation the week previous, package it, send it out, deliver it, bring it all back, and rinse, wash, and repeat. This is something that we do weekly. Let's see here. I'm kind of looking at some notes. Barriers, like I said, would be the turnover rate in staff. Luckily, we've had a pretty good group in the kitchen as far as cooks and whatnot. They've been pretty stable and there all the time, so we haven't had any issues with that. We currently are partnering with organizations such as like PCC, which is a outlet, grocery type outlet here. I don't know if it's all over the U.S. or not, or if it's just the Northwest thing, but they provide us with gift cards for a certain amount of money so that we can go out and utilize to purchase the products for the program. Right now, I'm the one that does the shopping, and usually I'm at the store shopping for the weekend program as we speak. What we're looking to do to move forward to make it easier, both with staffing and labor prices and stuff, is I'm in the process of setting up accounts with local vendors to do ordering online and have it delivered to the site, so that during the week, or like today when we're open and we have teams in the center, all staff are on deck and everybody's here, so we're not losing staff with shopping. And this also gives another opportunity for the teams that are involved in the program later on down the road to learn that additional skill for catering or for the program to be able to learn how to do forecasting and ordering and whatnot. And that's pretty much it. That's the gist of it. We have a centralized program. It's delivered to 12 sites throughout the city of Seattle. The child and adult care food program, they do have guidelines. It is healthy meals. There is certain measurements and whatnot that has to be involved in each meal that we serve and make. There are auditing things, and there's ways that we have to track it and turn it in. The cool thing about this program and what we do is that at the end of it, once we track at each of the 12 sites how many meals we served and turned in the receipts and stuff, we get reimbursed a portion of the cost that we paid for the food. So that's one cool thing about that, especially with, you know, sites or programs that may not have a lot of money to put out there or not able to, you know, expend those funds, to be able to go through a program and have something where you get some reimbursement back to kind of cushion, you know, the loss of the funding. That's something that's really cool. We haven't been at that part yet. We haven't made it to that point, but that's something that we are definitely working towards.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie. And before we move on, can you just share a little bit about what the meals look like that you serve on weekends?
Sure. So for instance, the monthly calendar is created prior. So right now I'm working on the November calendar. But every night, Friday and Saturday nights, just to give you an example, this Friday they'll be cooking a cheeseburger casserole with coleslaw, mixed fruit, and 2% milk. Like I said, the CACFP program is extremely strict on exactly the portions and what each child is supposed to get to reach the nutritional value. And so, for instance, for that specific meal, each participant would need to receive 2 ounces of beef, a cup of pasta, half cup of coleslaw, half cup of fruit, and an 8-ounce cup of 2% milk. And it can range from everything. The only thing that we do not do, and it's more of a City of Seattle thing, is serve anything with like pork products. We have we normally serve stuff as far as like lean chicken, turkey, and some beef.
Wonderful, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we are going to move along to our next presenter. Our next presenter is Laura Horn. Laura is a program director overseeing the year-round food program and mobile fit program at the YMCA of Metropolitan Chattanooga, Tennessee. Most recently, Laura has become the Tennessee Anti-Hunger Champion for the YUSA Food Program Capacity Building Program. Laura?
Hey, yes. So, I will tell you a little bit about our YMCA and our food program history. So we're a mid-sized YMCA. We're mainly located in urban areas, but we do serve rural areas as well as suburban. So for our meal program, we yearly serve over 120,000 meals, combined with breakfast, lunch, supper, snacks throughout the year-round program. So we estimate to serve over 4,000 youth in our surrounding Chattanooga area. We specifically, for after-school programs, we have about 46 after-school sites that we are providing meals and or snacks for. In the summertime, of course, we have an increased amount of summer sites with over 70 sites in our Chattanooga area and about 15 run through our North Georgia locations. Our program started back in May 2011. We have open sites during the summer, and then we serve after-school program sites during the school year. We serve as the sponsor, so we are taking on all the administrative parts of the SFSP and CACFP programs. We serve all types of meals during after-school time. It's a supper and possibly a snack if the program is a longer program for the children. During breaks, we typically do breakfast and lunch, and then that's what we typically serve during the summertime, breakfast and lunch for the students. So back in summer 2015 is when we decided to look at adding weekend meals to our programming and see how that would work for our programs. So with that, just some of the logistics of our meal program. Like I said, we are the sponsor, so we have that responsibility. We also self-prep all our meals. We don't vend out, so we have that obligation as well, which we utilize a lot of volunteers that come and help prepare and pack the meals, which has been a vital tool for our ongoing success and stability of our program, with over 300 volunteers that give over 3,000 hours a year to our program. So that's definitely something that adds into the factor of us being able to add the weekend meals. The staff comes to our central kitchen location to pick up the meals and then take them out to the various community sites. We have key partners that help us be able to, expand into weekend meals, using our local university, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. We use a lot of college students. Also, our big partner is a lot of our faith-based community, so churches throughout our community, and also our Department of Education system is a big partner. So how we dived into the weekend meal service, we started out by, deciding that we would try it at all of our locations because we weren't really sure how successful it was going to be. So we started the weekend meals at all of our community-based sites. And through that, we're able to have some pros and cons that we found out about what works and what doesn't. The pros were being able to provide, food to children during the weekend times, increasing the amount of meals that we were able to serve, which helps with the sustainability of the program. It also allowed for more time for enrichment activities with these kids, via STEM, literacy and learning programs, more physical activity and sports programming that we would be able to do with the children as well. Some of the cons that we found out, so some barriers that you might run into yourself when you're deciding to launch out into weekend meals, that this doesn't always work for all the sites that you currently operate. So since we decided to start out back in 2015 with all the sites with weekend meals, through that we looked at that data and made decisions of what sites should stay open, the ones that were working for the kids, and then the ones that, you know, we were not having any participation or very, very low participation, you know, we decided to make the decision to, you know, no longer operate those sites on the weekends. So that's a big, big barrier, but or something to look at when you're thinking about weekend meals. You can either some tips of like figuring out what sites should be weekend sites or where should you do weekend meals for kids is definitely looking at the locations of the sites. Is it easy access for the kids to get to the location on the weekends? Is it a school or is it a community-based site where the kids can easily walk to the site if they don't have transportation via parents or guardians to get to the sites. So also mapping out locations, doing surveys with participants in your current programs to find out would they be interested in bringing their child to a weekend site or would the child also be willing to participate. Looking at programs that you might already be working with that have programming for kids on the weekends, that's a easy win. If kids are going to be there for sports or other programming, easy just to tag along with that and make that a meal site location for the children in that community. Of course, like I said, you can always do a test run with opening a weekend site and just seeing if it does work, and then if it doesn't, just making that decision to just close the site. So that you're not wasting any staff time or resources. Another barrier that you might face is, deciding do you have enough staff that'll be willing to commit to working on the weekends or any things that you might face with staffing. So just keeping that in mind when you're preparing and planning for starting weekend meals. Also making sure that you get the word out to the community and the children and families so that they know that you're having a weekend program. So, this easy win is putting flyers out through the school, any of your community partners like churches or other nonprofit organizations, using your social media to get the word out, also food banks and other resources where these families might go for assistance. So that they will know about your weekend location for children and working with the various partners and community organizations in your community.
Great. Thanks, Laura. That is definitely something that we hear a lot, that with weekend meal service, it's best to start with those programs that are already offering some kind of enrichment or educational component rather than building it from the ground up just to get started. So thanks, that was really great information. All right, so we are going to move on to our next speaker. And our next speaker is Eugenie Sellier. Eugenie is the Alabama Child Nutrition Coordinator at Feeding the Gulf Coast.
So a little bit more about what I do at Feeding the Gulf Coast. So I not only help oversee the after-school meals program, CACFP, but I also help oversee the summer feeding program and our backpack program as well. I've been with the organization for about 3.5 years. Feeding the Gulf Coast is a part of the network of food banks under Feeding America. We have 24 counties in our service area, so we actually span across 3 states. We work in Lower Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. And we have those programs in all 3 states as well. We have a coordinator stationed at each one of our warehouses in each one of the states, and they operate those programs. In Alabama specifically, we're actually the only food bank that operates the federal programs, and in Mississippi, we're the only food bank that operates the federal programs. We also serve as one of the largest sponsors in both states. So we work very closely with our State Department when it comes to collaborating on these programs and serving more children. Right now, with our after-school program, we serve 125 sites across the three states. We're reaching over 6,000 children. We not only offer snacks, but we also offer hot supper in our Mobile City area. And in the cases where our sites are unable to serve hot supper, we have non-perishable meals, or we call them shelf-stable meals, that we can offer them that have all the components for it to be considered a supper. For the breakfasts that we serve over the holidays, we actually use those in our summer feeding program, and they are also shelf-stable. The milk we get is shelf-stable milk. It's high-temperature milk, so none of it has to be temperature control, which adds a lot and helps our sites a lot, especially the ones that aren't able to get the Department of Health inspections, so they're able to still serve those additional meals without having to worry about those restrictions. We work with a variety of partners, not only including schools, but we work with the Boys and Girls Clubs, we work with YMCAs, Parks and Rec sites, community centers, and we also work with faith-based organizations. All of our snacks, as I mentioned, our juice, our meals, our milk, are all non-perishable. They come in a variety, so with juice, we usually have about four different flavors. In place of juice, we will offer applesauce, and we offer fruit strips as well. Most of our snacks are like the Lance crackers. We have a variety of flavors of them. We also offer pretzels, granola sleeves, oatmeal bars, items like that, to have that variety with them. Our shelf-stable meals that we offer that go in place of the hot suppers, they come in a variety as well, and they can be consist of different items such as like a beef and cheese stick with some crackers, and they'll get like an applesauce, and then we'll add a chocolate milk. There are other flavors, like there's a salsa one that the kids really like where they get a serving of salsa, they'll get tortilla chips, a juice or an applesauce, and they'll get a chocolate milk with that as well. So we have about probably like five to six different flavors of those shelf-stable meals. And then with the breakfasts, we also have a variety of those as well. The breakfast meals usually consist of cereal bowls, and they'll come with a applesauce or a juice. And there'll be all different flavors like Apple Jacks, mini wheats, Fruit Loops, items like that. And then we'll just add a white milk with that for the children to have for their cereal. So to give you a little bit of idea of how large our program is, not just by our site number, but last school year we served over 685,000 snacks. We served over 81,000 suppers, and then we served over 6,000 breakfasts. I'm going to touch a little bit more on the holiday meals because we only serve about two to three sites on the weekend, mainly just because they're just not open on the weekends, and it's also because they have staff limitations. So we mainly target sites that are serving over the holidays and do not have access to those meals. And also the ones that are in our backpack program do not have access to those meals either over the holidays with the schools being out. So whenever we're looking to set up the holiday service, first thing we do is we make sure sites are aware of the service. So whenever we do our annual training with them, we let them know, you know, whenever the holidays are approaching, we do offer this. So just think about this in the future whenever you're designing your program or planning out your schedule. You can get meals from us over the holidays. Next, getting closer to the holidays, we will actually survey our sites. So we'll use SurveyMonkey and send out just a quick little link so we can kind of figure out who's serving. So we'll ask for their site name, when do they plan on serving, so when their start date and end date is, what days of the week they're planning on serving, and how many children they're anticipating to have, which really helps us kind of see what we need to prepare for, when we need to get their meals to them, and how many they're looking at serving. Usually we have about a third of our sites. Out of the 125, we usually have about a third of them that are going to be serving over the holidays. From there, we'll notify our State Department, make sure everything's updated on our online application with them, get the sites approved, add the extra meal service, and once they are approved, then we'll go ahead and start setting up deliveries. So since all of our food is, except for the hot suppers, since all of our other items are non-perishable and shelf-stable, we give them 2 weeks at a time, so they're able to store it in their pantry, and then they're welcome to refrigerate the milk or the juice if they want. It doesn't have to be. And they will store, and then they'll serve it for the holidays. We'll give them enough, especially over the Christmas holidays. We'll give them enough to serve for those entire holidays. If for some reason they need an emergency order, we will actually plan a monitoring visit. So we're hitting two birds with one stone. We're able to go to the site, monitor them, and drop off their snack delivery at once so we can get those two things done at the same time. So once we get them the food, all of our forms are actually electronic. That was one thing our State Department did earlier this year. They made our attendance forms, our monthly meal count forms, and we even do an inventory with them. All those forms are electronic, so they already have those on hand, so we don't have to worry about getting their reports from them. They turn them in the last day of the month. They're keeping track of them already. And a lot of the partners we work with are already keeping track of their attendance records anyways, being that they're Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs, and even the Parks and Rec sites actually have sign-in sheets as well. We also give our sites, which is really handy, at training every year, we give them a notebook so they can organize everything in there, and sometimes we'll even provide them with a school schedule and a list of sites in their area. So in case they are closed, they can defer children to those sites that are open so they can get food from them. Going more in detail with our hot meals, we actually prepare everything here at our warehouse. We have an industrial kitchen here, and we have two full-time chefs that we work with, and we have a five-week rotating menu with our supper program. And then over the holidays, we'll try to incorporate more of the holiday menu, you know, like for Thanksgiving. We'll try to do like a turkey with gravy and stuffing that'll still meet the requirements to serve. From there, we actually have an RD we work with that's on staff that'll help us prepare that menu. We usually prepare this menu at the beginning of each school year. We actually use, because we serve hot meals over the summer as well, so we actually survey our sites every year to see, and we survey our kids too, to see what food items they don't like, which ones they do like, so we can kind of start planning our menus out near the end of summer, moving into the school year when we're planning that five-week rotating menu. There are things that we will we won't really specify. Like sometimes we don't always specify the type of vegetables or fruit because we try to use a seasonal vegetable or fruit depending on the time of the year to use in those meals. We currently have about 10 sites that are serving hot supper with us, and they get deliveries daily. So our chefs come in, they prep the meals. They're always prepping a day ahead of time. And most of the sites have set numbers because they are enrolled programs. And from there, our chefs will come in the day of. They'll warm up the meals, count out any extra things they need, like plates, utensils, napkins, their milk, any items like that that they need to add to it. And then from there, they'll heat up the pans. And we actually have a truck that will store the meals at the temperature is heat. It's a heated truck, so it's able to store the meals at the appropriate temperature and keep them warm for travel. We have two different routes we work on. So one route, we use that truck. Another route, we actually just use a van and hot boxes to get the meals to the sites. We do provide, as I was mentioning, we do provide all of our sites with the non-food products, so the plates, utensils, the napkins, any condiments that they may need. We also supply them with all of the food prep items, like the hot boxes, the warmers, the serving spoons, gloves. One thing our health department requires is that they have the test strips for testing the water, or testing the sanitizer, so we provide them with that as well. Just to try to keep them from having to worry about that, we provide everything that's involved with the meals. And as I mentioned, in cases where sites do not have a Department of Health inspection or have some restrictions even with their kitchen or something like that, we do offer those shelf-stable meals to them for the supper, and then we also have sites that will serve breakfast in addition to serving their snack in the afternoon. So some of the barriers, I've kind of already mentioned one that we may run into is if sites run out of product over the holidays. One thing that we are able to do is just schedule monitor visits with them, and we can, again, hit two birds at one stone. We can monitor at the same time and drop off a snack order. We actually do that a lot, not just over the holidays, but during the regular school year. We're able to get that done with them. With participation, we do work with a lot of organizations that have programming and that are very well structured. So the YMCAs, the Boys and Girls Clubs, even the Parks and Rec Centers, we work with them, and a lot of them even have their own announcements that'll go out on flyers that'll go out to the families they serve, the kids they serve, letting them know that they will be open for the holidays and that the parents can drop their kids off there, and that they don't have to provide the kids with the meals or the snacks or the breakfast, that they will provide them for them. With the community centers and the parks and rec sites, especially at the city level, we work with our city office. We actually attend a lot of their council meetings, and that, and working with your city office is very important, making sure that they're aware of the services you provide, especially if you're providing them to some of their centers, because we work very closely with our parks and rec director, and we were able to join their they have a task force they're coming that's going to be taking place that we're going to be a part of to help really engage the community with driving them to those parks and rec centers that are providing the meals for the children so that just that they even know it's available. One thing that we will do that we won't do with the other sites, since the parks and rec centers and the community centers are more open to the public and they're not so closed and enrolled, we will do releases on those sites, letting the community know, you know, if you are out for the holidays, these sites are providing meals that you can bring your children to. Some of the partners that we work with are not only our State Department to allow us to get the sites rolling to serve over the holidays and possibly the weekends, but just working closely with the sites, knowing what their availability is, knowing their limitations, knowing what they can do, and even ways that we can help them. We work not only with the people on the ground, so not only with the individuals at the site, but we also work with their directors as well. So we can kind of have that back and forth with them to let them know what's going on, what's available, and what they can do to, you know, keep the program going, increase participation, even provide the educational activities. We usually let all of our one really good resource we let all of our sites know about, especially when they're looking for activities to provide for their kids. The USDA has has the Team Nutrition website, and that allows you to even order free materials if you are a participating site or sponsor. So they have like books, worksheets, posters, all kinds of fun stuff that we let our sites know about. So if they don't really know what kind of activities to provide for the kids, we can send them in that direction, and they're able to get those items for free. So whenever you're thinking about doing this holiday service, a weekend service, definitely make sure you're working with, I know it's already been mentioned, but it's pretty important, make sure you're working with organizations that are well-structured and they're familiar with the program. Ones that you maybe not even have to, you can be more hands-off with them, because that's very important for us, especially with the amount of sites we're serving. We're more hands-off with them. We know they're going to get everything done they need to get done. We pretty much are there providing with the meals, and they can handle everything else on their end. You don't have to micromanage them. We know they're going to turn their paperwork in. We know they're going to follow all the regulations of the program. So we can be very hands-off with them, and they can kind of run it how they want to run it, depending on their program on their end. And also collaborating with those organizations, having meetings with them if you need to have meetings with them, going out to their site, talking it through with them, being a part of you know, the council meetings and items like that, so where you can be engaged with them. Also, when sites are serving over the holidays, it lets us be more flexible, as I mentioned, and we can do the additional monitor visits, and that really helps us a lot when we're serving them. So that's pretty much our program, how we operate it, and we pretty much practice it across all three states. Alabama has a little bit larger of a program, but we still kind of streamlined it across all three states to make it easy, and we work very closely with our state departments to make that process flow a lot simpler and allow for sustainability and streamlining of the processes.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you so much. I love that idea of giving sites that calendar tool to kind of mark whether they're interested in holiday service and then also including it in the training. And then I'd also just echo the Team Nutrition resources. If you haven't checked them out yet, definitely do so. They just came out with a new summer meals toolkit this summer, and there are some great physical activity and nutrition education resources. So we will definitely include that in our newsletter that goes out at the end of this month. All right, so we are going to shift gears and move to our last speaker, who's going to kind of share that anti-hunger advocate perspective. And we will hear from Caitlin Smith from New Mexico Appleseed.
Thanks so much, Clarissa. I'm Caitlin. I'm a staff attorney at New Mexico Appleseed. Just a little bit of background on us. We're a policy advocacy organization. So even though we're lawyers, we don't litigate, and so we never go to court. And we don't provide any direct services, but we do a lot of work to try to improve anti-hunger policy, and we do a lot of work with community organizations to try to make sure that they're able to make the best possible use of anti-hunger programs. And we work to expand meal access across the board. So historically, we've done a lot of work with Breakfast After the Bell. We've done a lot of work on community eligibility. And we've done summer and after school meals. But we're really trying to work now on thinking of the meal programs in a holistic way. And I'm really excited, actually, to be in this fourth spot because I feel like I can draw on a lot of the elements that have come up before that the other speakers have mentioned. We're using a lot of those, and a lot of those are really just amazing best practices to try to put into work in any community you're in. So as I said, we're trying now to think of the programs not as separate feeding programs, but as a combined effort to feed children year-round. And in the past, we've used different kinds of ways of describing this. We've talked about year-round feeding. We used to talk about a conveyor belt, where you sort of bring the kids through the year with some meals. And we've settled on talking about the concept as one meal a day. So we realized if you combine all of the meals programs, if you combine school breakfast and lunch, you combine really a big use of CACFP, and you combine summer feeding with that, you can make sure that kids in high poverty areas get at least one free meal every single day of the year, and often two or three meals. So we're calling this our one meal a day campaign. And we know weekends are often neglected, so weekends and holidays are a big part of the one meal a day campaign. And the way the campaign works is pretty simple. We're trying to spread it around the state, but it's a hyper-local, community-based decision-making model. So we're going to different communities and helping them build local one-meal-a-day task forces with key local decision-makers. So you're really trying to get everybody who can get meals to kids literally around the same table, because cool things happen when you can get everybody together. So that's mayors and people from city and county governments, or somebody from the mayor's office who can make decisions, major nonprofits like food banks, but also organizations that work with kids like YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs, representatives from the schools, representatives from faith communities. So again, many echoes of what the previous speakers have said. We have a toolkit that we give to the task forces, and part of the toolkit is a calendar. And we encourage people to literally go through the calendar and fill in the places where there are meals, and then look at the gaps. And that's pretty powerful to be able to look and say, okay, kids are getting meals at school. Where are they getting meals on the weekends? Where are they getting meals on Martin Luther King Day? And we're really encouraging creative approaches to providing meals. So a lot of people are sort of used to the model where you have a big organization, and that organization is the sponsor, and it serves meals at its own site, and it prepares the meals. And we're finding interesting options with separating out the roles of the sponsors, sites, and vendors. And it's a simple approach, but it's really liberating for people that we have sites that are really gun-shy about sponsoring, but they're happy to be sites for somebody else. And we have organizations with the capacity to sponsor who can't prepare meals in-house. We know that with this model, particular solutions are going to vary community by community, and that's by design. We want communities to use their resources and to address the needs and barriers in their communities. they're going to use a combination of strategies we've talked about on this call, like building on existing programs that are there on weekends, using shelf-stable meals when fresh meals aren't an option, or as a backup, you can have shelf-stable meals available for snow days, for example. I want to talk a little bit about some work we've done specifically on after-school meals in Santa Fe, just as an example of the kind of creative separation of the roles, because I think this is going to help us expand into weekend meals as well. We have a food bank that is willing to be a sponsor for CACFP. They're not going to prepare any meals, but they can be a sponsor. We have a fantastic vendor that is willing to prepare and deliver meals to multiple sites. And that sponsor and that vendor are combining to serve, starting out next week, three separate after-school meal program sites that are running really different programs in really different places in Santa Fe. One is the Boys and Girls Club, which 3 days a week is doing a traditional Boys and Girls Club after-school program, which is going to get meals, and 2 days a week is doing this kind of innovative homework diner model where they're bringing parents and kids in together with tutors to support them, and they're going to have a family meal with some homework help provided, and we have a little bit of county funding coming in to pay for the parents' meal. So that's one site. Another site is the high school, which is doing this bare-bones tutoring program. It's really simple. They're just opening up the library after school and having a teacher volunteering there to answer questions and make sure the kids have access to computers in the evening to do their homework. That's getting meals. And finally, there's a Communities in Schools program. I shouldn't say it's just Communities in Schools. They're, the Communities in Schools coordinator at one of our elementary schools heard about it and is getting meals not just for Communities in Schools, but for all the after-school programs at this particular elementary school. The beauty of this program is that we're getting meals to places that we couldn't have under a more traditional model. We know that the school district is working at capacity. They weren't able to prepare any more meals. So particularly the school sites felt like they were out of luck, and now they're getting meals this other way. But also, this is going to make it pretty easy for us to expand. The caterer, who's a vendor, has a lot of capacity to prepare more meals. The sponsor is happy to continue sponsoring more sites. So once this is up and running, we're already looking at how many more schools we can expand to and how we can use this to make sure we're getting meals to kids on days off of school. So we're pretty excited about the possibility for expansion through this flexible model. And again, this grew out of this idea of you bring the decision makers together, you fill in a calendar, and you look for what resources you have, what each person can bring to the table, and you try to get meals to kids that way. So one meal a day, we're really excited about it, and we hope it can be a useful model elsewhere as well.
Thanks, Caitlin. That was a really great example of some of the ways to collaborate between schools and community partners. All right, so we have heard from our four speakers today, and I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines for questions. And again, if you feel more comfortable, you can email me at chayes@frac.org.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
All right, so the lines are open if anybody has any questions.
Sure, can you hear me?
We can, yes.
This is Rob. I'm in Wareham, Massachusetts. And we have a CACFP program we currently do at night, which is running fine. But I have a teacher that's doing meals on the weekend and holidays. But what she does is on Friday, she packages them up in a backpack and sends them home for the weekend. Does anyone currently do anything like that? I mean, it's all non-perishable stuff. Obviously, it's not like, you know, milk. But what type of program would I be able to do under the CACFP, or that I could still kind of do it and get the reimbursements for?
Sure. So backpack programs are definitely popular, and I know a lot of food banks run those, and I think Eugenie might be able to speak to that a little bit more. But after-school meal program, they have to be served in a congregate manner, so children have to go to a central location and consume the meal. So the backpack option can be reimbursed under CACFP, but it's definitely a model to look into if you're working closely with a food bank and you know that there's need on the weekend that is not being reached through the child nutrition program. So I will let our speakers, if anyone wants to kind of talk to this a little bit and share some of the ways that you've used backpack programs.
Yeah, so in general, how we use it is more as a privately funded program. With whenever we have sites that have their product, usually they will do have a share box or something like that, that they'll roll over throughout the school year. So once they've served the snacks, the children can go put those items in a box that they can, additional children can go out and get seconds if they'd like, or they can even in the future days switch out maybe items they don't like. We just tell the sites that we don't want it back, so it's up to them to get rid of it how they need to. But one thing that children can do now is actually take one of those snack items off site. So we do make sure they are aware of that, our sites are aware of that if a child wants to take a juice with them or if they want to take a pack of crackers with them off site, if they don't want to eat it there, they can also do that as well.
I have a question. I'd like to know, how do you go about being able to serve the kids for the after school? How do I go about applying for that?
Thanks for your question. So are you, we can also talk offline if you need a little bit more help with the getting started, but are you running a after school meal program or after school program? If so, you would just need to reach out to your state agency to get started.
Okay, what we have with the summer, we did the summer program. We were the sponsor during the summer program, during the summer.
Okay, that's great. That means that you have an understanding of how the meal programs works, and it's pretty easy to work with the state agency just to transition over to start doing after school through CACFP. So we can definitely, if you want to talk offline with me, we can do that and chat a little bit more. I just want to make sure that there's time to talk about the weekend component of after school meals. All right. Any other questions about weekends? We did have two questions come over email, so I can ask those and give folks time to think of more questions. But this question is for Stephanie, and the question was, we have a hard time attracting teens. You mentioned you have a teen program. Do you have any advice?
What I would say, honestly, is social media, tap into what they're doing, tap into what brings them in, figure out if it's doing SurveyMonkey or going out to the schools and doing outreach and just explaining what your programs are and getting feedback from the teens and finding out what it is that interests them. I guess it would also depend on the type of the teens or the demographics that you work with, depending on, where you're at and who is the main people that you serve would also be something to look at. Mainly what we do, I work in a specific teen life center, so that's all I work with our teens. That's where we have community centers that are, serve a wide range of people throughout the city. So one of the things that we do to bring new teens in or bring the newer generations in is the school outreach, getting the partnership set up with your public schools, private schools, going in, talking to the teens during their lunch hour or lunch breaks, bringing in stuff to draw them in, whether it's, treats or demonstrations of programs that you do and just various stuff like that. Social media works. That's what majority of our teens use, word out on special events and programs and things that you offer. I think that would be a great first step to kind of, build the population of teens and get more people involved.
Great, thanks. And the thing that I would add on to that is just another way to engage teens that we've been seeing a lot is kind of using them as either volunteers or mentors for the younger children. That's a good way to kind of draw them in and just kind of engage them in a different way. So that's one possibility.
And then real quick to kind of piggyback off of what you said, another thing that we do here is offer a lot of paid internships. We know nowadays teens like to have money. They like to, you know, do whatever. And so offering those paid internships, whether it be through a partnership like the Seattle Youth Violence Prevention Initiative that we have, Boys and Girls Club, other stuff like that. A lot of times if you provide a job readiness internship that's paid, you'll get a lot of teens coming in because they want to make the money.
Great. Thank you. All right. Any other questions over the line?
Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Yes, just wanted to know, what was the website that you said about the activities and the calendar and a link to the calendar?
Sure. So the activities are available through USDA's Team Nutrition, which I can get that link and send it around. And then the calendar was mentioned by Feeding the Gulf Coast, our speaker, Eugenie, from there. And I don't know, is that something that you would be able to share with the audience?
So usually what I do is I just use the local school system's calendar. So I will actually go to each of the school system's websites and print out one and then just provide it to the site so that they know when kids are out of school and when the holidays are.
Understood. Thank you.
All right, and we did have another question come over email, and this was geared towards our sponsors. And the question is there different paperwork for sponsors operating on weekends? So I think this question might be asking whether there's any kind of different expectations if you're doing meals on the weekends or anything else that you have to do to get approval to operate on weekends.
So there isn't different paperwork for the site personnel to complete. They still are completing their normal roster and their normal distribution reports that they would normally complete during the regular school year or during the regular serving days. With us on our end, with getting them approved, all of our state applications online, so we just go on to our state application. Usually I'll also maybe kind of call our state agency and a specialist there and kind of let them know that I'm going to be adding them on, maybe even if not through phone, through email, some kind of informal way to let them know that I will be doing this and make sure, you know, to kind of get the approval by word of mouth. And then from there, I'll just go on our state website and go to their facility app on there and submit for approval there.
Great, thank you. All right, so I'll give folks a couple more minutes just to think of any last questions. Otherwise, you can definitely feel free to reach out to me after the call, chayes@frac.org, and I can either answer your question or direct you to one of our speakers from today. But I just wanted to mention again that today's call has been recorded and will be on our website by the end of the day. We'll try to gather all the resources that were mentioned and send those out as well. And then I just wanted to give a shout-out for next month's call, which is going to be on cities operating and expanding the after-school nutrition program. So that's going to cover different strategies for including after-school meals in a citywide anti-hunger initiative and different ways that cities have taken on the program. All right. So if we have no further questions, I'll go ahead and wrap up today's call. Many thanks to our four wonderful speakers for joining us today and sharing your expertise on serving on weekends and holidays. And then if you wanted more resources for this, we do have a one-pager and more resources on this on our website. So thanks, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks so much, Teresa.